When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Market. And welcome to Shift F1, a podcast about speedy race cars. That, by the way, is Singlish.
Singlish.
Singlish. That itself is a portmanteau of Singapore and English.
Oh, it's not like Singlish. How are you today, Drew? Shall we talk about Formula One?
Oh, no, that's very good.
Not that Singlish.
You Singlish in American accent.
I do, yeah. Amazing. Theater is the mid-Atlantic accent lives a lovely life in the world of theater, I believe.
Amazing. Well, Singlish is a Creole language.
Oh, very cool.
In Singapore. But to spoil market means to overachieve.
Spoil market, overachieve. Yes. Okay, are we supposed to be able to...
Certain Red Bull driver might be spoiling the market.
Oh, yeah. I would say. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even Max fans at this stage must be getting a little bit, you know, it's like.
We'll get to some math later in the show that demonstrates this.
This is the monkey paw that they they made their choice on.
Yeah.
And it's curled now. And we have to live with the consequences.
I'm Drew Scanlon. Joining me, Danny O'Dwyer. How are you, Danny?
I'm great. Great. We obviously did not enjoy a Formula One race this weekend, but we did enjoy the end of the IndyCar season, and it was a pretty good time. Laguna Seca, they had like 59 different restarts. 30% of the race was done under yellow flag. I believe stage, the pace car had to come in and refuel, which meant that I forget who it was, with the Scott Dixon or somebody at the front, they had to have on the radio and pace. They had to like tell him what pace to go. Because, I've never heard of that before. Like,
wait, are you saying that a driver was coaching the driver of the safety car on fuel saving?
No, the whoever it was, I forget who it was.
Oh, he became the safety
became the pace car. The
safety car. Wow. Yeah. Okay. So, man, I got to watch this.
Yeah, it was, I mean, if you watch the highlights that are on YouTube, and I recommend anyone to do it, you don't get any of that. You just get like, oh, they restarted the race. They all crashed on turn 11, like basically the final turn before the straight at Laguna Seca. Caution, full course caution. You know, cut to black, next shot, we're back, we're starting the race, they all crash on turn 11. It kept happening over and over. At one stage, Grosjean was winning the race pretty
good.
I won't give it all away. I mean, a lot of people, and it was a good interesting winner, let's say, and the season was done for at that stage, but it was a good race, and I kind of wish I went. I had like a family appointment, I couldn't do it, but otherwise I got to do it next year. It's not that far from here, you know.
Same.
It's not that
Rob Zachney on assignment this week, but if you are new to this podcast, a very warm welcome to you. And if you are new to Formula One itself, we recommend listening to our preseason primer episode, which assumes no prior F1 knowledge and explains how the sport works and who everybody is. So if you'd like to go back and listen to that, it's episode 216. Also, this show would not be possible without our audience over at patreon.com/shiftf1, where every month we release an ad-free version of the podcast, along with bonus podcasts and videos that are exclusively for our patrons that cover racing documentaries and films, F1 video games, experiments with other racing series, and a lot of weird things. So if you would like to support the show and get access to all that fun stuff, head over to patreon.com/shiftf1 or click the link in the show notes. What do we have going on in Patreon land this month, Danny?
We still haven't decided what to do this month, and apparently there's some emails that might suggest some things. So I haven't read those yet, so... I look forward to hearing those later on in this episode. A little bit of a little bit of carrot on a stick there for everyone having a listen. And a massive thanks to, of course, all of our incredible title sponsors, Agave ATX, Cyphus Training, Turf SES, At Team Blackjack, Michael Maves, Gordy's Army, At Talking Autos, Olivia Evans, TelemetryDeck.com, FTC, Drew Stewart, Bailey Foot, Abdullah Althani, Jason Chadwick, Abraham Getchell, The Space Above Us, Bunny Fiend, Snigs, Alex Goucher, Max Faltar, Circuit Demon, Troy Stammer, Umberto Roca, William Rompf, Irvine Clinical Research, Lachlan the Madden Man, Jason Kelly, and a very important new arrival, M Squared Racing welcomes Ellie. I believe one of our listeners has a new arrival on the way. So glad to ring in Ellie into the world. Here's a vroom just for you. Everyone remembers their first.
Fantastic. Well, let's just jump right into the news. We've got.
Yeah.
It's really all over the place.
It's a weird. This is a. You know, when sometimes pre-race we don't have that much to talk about. The F1 gods delivered. This is just a real grab bag of nonsense.
Let's start with a banger, Danny.
What? Sure.
We're going back to this well.
Okay, so
the old 2008,
the old Crash
Championship.
Gate. Yeah. Crash Gate will never end. We will forever be living in the wake of this, regardless of how many of the people involved are retired or have passed away. This is quite a while ago at this stage. Of course, we are talking about the 2008 Formula One World Championship won by Sir Lewis Hamilton, just ahead of Felipe Massa. One of the controversial things that happened that year, outside of their battle, all things considered, was Crashgate. Was when there was an incident.
The Singapore Grand Prix, no less.
Sorry, you're right. Of course, yeah. I don't even think about that. Yeah. An intentional crash that was done to basically give Fernando Alonso a benefit. There was so much of a fallout. Of we've talked about loads over the past couple of weeks and months because Felipe Massa has had this idea. Bernie Eccleston did an interview a number of months back, an interview he does not remember because he is 1,000 years old, where he basically said that him and Max Mosley had said that they should probably, they had plans or thought about scratching off the result of that race, but decided to just kind of sit on it until the season was over and act on it later. Felipe Massa obviously heard about this. The result of that race was largely, I guess, in the end to Lewis Hamilton's favor. But so he has sort of started a legal defense to some end. We assumed that this end would probably be financial. Number one, because in general, there is a sort of a widely considered 14-day rule in the FIA where, like, with outside of that, results are final. They are stamped regardless of, what happens afterwards. And also because they did put out a statement that said, I forget the exact wording, but it was along the lines of he has had many damages as a result of this, within his career. And who amongst us who watched that era of Formula One or knows about it would argue that fact. I mean, Massa wins that season. He lost in the most painful way possible. He had basically won the season until Timo Glock binned it on, went wide on the second to last corner of Interlagos. Hamilton got that place and then ended up winning the championship. So, and it was all
right.
Played
out. And they're working backwards, though, to the Singapore race because...
They are.
Although it's tricky because even if you excluded... Nelson Piquet, the one who crashed.
Yes.
The result would still be the same, right? And so
yes.
Massa would still not have won the championship had that happened. But that's not what their team wants, right?
No. So first of all, it sounds like, at least Bernardo Viana, his main legal defense, his main lawyer, has said that the objective is to bring the trophy home. This is not financial.
Okay.
So they are not, they are 100% in the, no, we are changing... who won the championship, right? Which is really kind of insane.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. Like you said, the only scenario actually that benefits Massa is if they annul the race. If they take him out of that, if they ratchet it back, like you said, then he doesn't get enough points. If they stop the race at that point, he doesn't get that, or Hamilton gets too many points more. Actually, Hamilton wins the championship by more. So the only way they do it is by annulling the race entirely. And the reason why they're going for that as well is that Bernie Eccleston said that. That's what they were considering. That's what they were talking about. There's a couple of other wrinkles in here. I've already mentioned the time issue with regard to the 14 days. There's also the issue of Charlie Whiting and Max Mosley no longer being alive. So they're not exactly available to be cross-examined or interviewed or anything like that. And also not really helping them is also that Ferrari is not involved in this. Ferrari is not trying to adjudicate this. You know, largely doesn't benefit them. I think it's bad PR and it's not likely to go anywhere. But it's just sort of shocking. There's a great article on Autosport we'll link in the show notes that basically kind of goes through a lot of this stuff. But I'm just mostly taken aback by the fact that they're going for it.
I think they feel like they have more ammo here because, well, there's two things. Some footage of the late FIA race director Charlie Whiting surfaced that indicated that Whiting also knew about the conspiracy before the end of the season.
Right.
But they have said that they have, Viana sees no problem in the fact that Eccleston has now suggested he cannot remember giving his recent interviews, nor that the passing of Whiting and Mosley means that they cannot be cross-examined. Irrelevant, said Viana about Eccleston's claim he forgot what he said. We're pretty confident with the evidence that we have. More than that, I cannot say at the moment.
Wild.
So they've got something up their sleeve.
Yeah, and I mean, when, you know, Nelson Piquet Jr. and Flavio Briatore got, like, you know, maybe not lifelong bans. Briatore, I think, was given a 10-year, something like that.
I thought that was a lifetime.
Maybe it was life for him. Yeah. Well, Nelson Piquet Jr. wasn't. But, like, they were, you know, it was obviously a huge controversy and they were effectively lost from F1 after that. So it's wild that it's being re-adjudicated upon. And largely it's kind of like it's not. Like it's detritus in an actual completely different case, basically. Like what Massa is trying to like win this season on a technicality in a way that also like obviously the butterfly effect from, you know, the race being annulled at that moment. Who knows what could have happened? You know what I mean? Like Hamilton was racing and Massa was racing based on the points that they were at the time, not this, you know, imaginary flow point that they're aiming for. So it seems the whole thing is just like, I cannot in a world which seems increasingly weird and anything is possible, even in sport, I cannot fathom a pathway to Massa suddenly being given this season. Yeah. Like, and also it being the maiden championship of Lewis Hamilton, which arguably, as much as Massa didn't deserve to lose that, Hamilton had lost the previous year's championship on the final race and basically almost threw away the championship during this race. Like, it was his to lose, you could argue. It certainly felt like that at the time. So the idea that you would take it away from Hamilton also seems incredibly cruel, given how that all went. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. It seems completely mad.
Well, the deadline for the FIA and F1 management to respond is Friday. Though I believe they've asked for more time, and Massa's team is currently deliberating on whether to grant it. So, stay tuned.
Why do they get to say, you know, why doesn't the FIA just ignore them? Just don't answer the phone. Just like straight to spam. It's very strange.
Well, speaking of rules and breaking them, F1 has been for a while clamping down on flexible body parts, body work of the cars, not of people. So one reason you might want flexible body work is to say, you know, decrease the drag at higher speeds. So if you've got like a front or a rear wing that is angled into the, you know, direction of travel, you would want that to be pressing against the wind in a low speed, but in a high speed, you'd want maybe that to compress down so that it's producing less drag.
Right.
The regulations basically say that that's not allowed. So this is from Autosport, quote, that includes wing elements that move or rotate in relation to the body work they are fixed to. The use of rubber fillets.
It's
I think it's fillets and not fillets.
Fillets.
That can permit localized deflection, plus designs that use soft trailing edges to aid flexing. So previously, the way this was policed was that the FIA would do stress tests on the components, like literally press on them to see if they flexed. But they've come to the conclusion that this doesn't catch all of those offenders. So FIA's single-seater director, Nicholas Tombazzi, says, there are static tests that we do to check, and it is obvious that these tests are never perfect because the direction of the test load you apply is always a bit different from the load that is on the track when it experiences genuine aerodynamic force. For example, one could draw a wing that when applying the forces of the FIA test is fixed, but when applying any other load could be more flexible. He goes on, some teams have components adjacent to each other that have a fairly high movement, but do not slide in tandem because these areas are covered with rubber material. So this isn't just about like, you know, the wing itself flexing, which you can sometimes see on the nose cam. But I think it's like areas of maybe the nose that the whole thing itself may dip.
Right.
We do not consider this acceptable, and for this reason, we have made a clarification. So as a result, and this again from Autosport, from now on, teams must submit the assembly drawings and cross-sections that show the fixation of the front wing elements to the nose, as well as the rear wing elements to the end plates, rear impact structure, and pylons. So this is so the FIA can review the designs and then better understand how a team might be attempting to circumvent the rules.
Yeah, it's a good example of the type of rules that, you know, often at the start of the season, if this is your first season, we didn't get too much of this year. There was a bit of weirdness around front wings that moved. That was, you know, but it seems to be largely.
And there's a thing about the rear wing and somebody touched it and that was bad.
Oh, yeah. God. But there's sort of like, there's lots of different, you know, element versions of this, but to me there are like the ones that are super obvious, like the dual axis steering Mercedes pulled out, you know what I mean?
Where
like everyone was like, what are they doing? That's a whole other thing. Or like, you know, blown diffuser or something like that. And then there's this stuff that it's almost like the FAA kind of gets a sense of it, or the other teams get a sense of it, and they're like, there's something going on here, and then it takes them a while to figure it out, to see it in replays, to notice it in the car, for the drivers often to see it. And that's kind of what this one is. And generally there's no like hard punishment. It's more of a clarification of the rules. And then a sort of a, you know, you have a window to basically make sure that you're compliant. I do wonder how this stuff does affect the cost cap stuff though, because like at the end of the day, it is work. It's re-engineering and it's it's fabricating and that type of thing.
Yeah. Cause the reason we're bringing this up now is because the deadline for submitting those designs was September 8th.
Okay.
So we may see some different wings at Singapore this weekend and potentially some different performance. What I don't know is why these rules are in here. Like, is it a cost-saving measure? Is this stuff too complex to develop? And is that why? Yeah.
Is it against the nature of the regulations as they were meant to be written? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It is weird. Sometimes
it
seems
perhaps flex outside of a certain range and therefore
that they didn't notice
exceeds.
It's so there's so much like context around this stuff that, you know, maybe it's better we don't know sometimes, maybe, or it's hard. I wonder I also wonder who's doing it. Like, I wonder who the main offenders are, or
Well, speaking of math,
math for
the Athletic, math for Verstappen. Yes, the Athletic crunched some numbers on when Max Verstappen could theoretically clinch the Formula One title.
Theoretically, being everyone else who is in second, third, or fourth gets like 0 points, like, and then he gets 25.
Well, so there are some different scenarios here.
Okay.
So
can I guess?
Sure.
Austin.
No.
Okay.
Well,
is that too late?
what, let me look at the schedule here.
Okay. And Matt's not my strong suit.
It could be Austin. I don't want to say no.
Yeah.
But it could also be earlier. So,
okay.
We still have, three other people that mathematically could win the championship if Max Verstappen. I actually had a dream.
Oh my God.
Last night.
About Max Verstappen?
That Max Verstappen was on, like, he was racing, like, on a, it was almost like a circuit around Minas Tirith. You remember this?
From Lord of the Rings?
Yes. Like a very...
What?
Like a castle that was really steep.
Okay.
And he flew off the track. He crashed and he flew off the track. And then, like, you know, thousands of feet below.
Yeah.
The camera was tracking his car. We're all like, oh no, he's going to crash and explode and die. But don't worry, he had a parachute.
Oh my God.
So
he had to get out of the car. That must have been really difficult to...
I know, to undo all the seatbelts.
Is Minas Tirith or Minas... Is that the one that has the walkway that your man falls off? He goes on fire and he runs off at it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that's... Yeah. If they were driving F1 in Middle Earth, that would be somewhere Red Bull would do a promo. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
They would, like, get the car.
They'd land
up
a plane on that.
Yeah,
thing.
100%. Yeah, makes sense.
Anyway, Sergio Perez, Fernando Alonso, and Lewis Hamilton could technically win the championship if Max Verstappen has to, you know, pull his parachute. And...
Sorry, Ferrari.
Yeah.
Now I want to know the other places that in Middle Earth that we'd have. I think the Red Bull Ring would be in, like, Hobbiton. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
It kind of looks like that.
All the rolling hills and...
Yeah.
I want to see the Mordor Grand Prix.
The Mordor Grand Prix. It's got a Mario Kart vibe to it, doesn't it? It's like Bowser's Castle or, you know, Flame One or something. There was that game F1 All-Stars that basically did this, right? Yeah. That, like, just had cartoon versions. Like the Rome or Monza, I guess, was like all Roman columns and stuff. That was pretty cool. That game was great. Make another one of those, Codemasters. I know I was the only person who bought it, but please do.
Also, I was on, I believe, the quick look for that game at Giant Bomb.
Excellent.
And whoever was with me, maybe Jeff, was like, are these real F1 guys? And I was like, I don't know.
Michael Schumacher? Yeah. Never heard of him.
before times. Anyway, if Verstappen wins everything and gets the fastest lap from here on out.
I forgot about that.
And Sergio Perez fails to score any more points, Verstappen could theoretically win in Japan.
Which is the race after this one, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, so if Checo doesn't get points.
Correct.
That's doable. Like, that's...
It's
that
possible.
Could happen. Like, he could easily.
I think it's unlikely,
crash
but it's possible.
It is possible. It's more likely than I was expecting for his early. I thought it would have been like if everyone was outside the points, but I guess if Perez is the only one who can catch him, it sounds like.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
if,
again,
but he has to win, I guess. Yeah.
Right. So, wow. If Verstappen, though, wins in Singapore, Japan, and Qatar, it does not matter what Sergio Perez does.
Okay.
He will win in Qatar.
He will win all those races. Those are
you
all.
Think so?
Yeah, I think so.
You're calling it. Danny's calling it Qatar.
Yeah. I mean, this one, unless he hits a wall, he's good in Singapore. Japan is not a circuit that benefits a weird team. Like, there's plenty of high speed there. I mean, there's high speed corners, but, like, there's too many. I could see the argument. There's not a lot of, like, traditional straights, but I feel like Red Bull do really well there. And then,
I mean, the guy is on a historic winning streak. He's in the best shape of his life.
In Qatar, I can't see him losing that one anyway.
There were multiple headlines this week going from different people, not in the Red Bull family, going like, Max Verstappen is nailing it. Somebody said he hasn't made a mistake in 2 years. It's crazy. Fred Vasseur, maybe?
It's wild.
It's wild. He's an alien.
He also hasn't had a teammate that's pushed him. Maybe true. Ever.
You could argue. Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah, Ricciardo did a bit, I guess. He literally pushed him off the track in Baku.
That's true. Very true. Speaking of aliens. Danny, do you want to talk about
oh my God.
Dr. Helmut Marko?
Dr. Helmut Marko. Doctor of what? Doctor of...
Oh, I'll look that up. We nonsense. Always forget.
All right. Resident old man, Helmut Marko, doing the job of accidentally being racist. Not just to Lewis Hamilton this time, but actually to one of his team's drivers. The only reason I meant to mention this, because I don't like ragging on Dr. Helmut Marko either, because he is...
Doctor in law.
In law, okay. Yeah. He is a man of a certain vintage, and I don't want to be cancelled for elder abuse, but...
he's 80 years old.
He has the ability to say a lot of... speak his mind, perhaps, is the way to say it. And this time he's just kind of fumbled into saying something really weird that was like both like sort of milquetoast racist and also just a lack of geographical knowledge that an 80-year-old man who spent most of his life traveling the world should probably know. And then on top of that, a statement which is demonstrably untrue if you know anything about Formula One. So Helmut Marko said, referring to Perez's up and down season, he said, "We know that he has problems in qualifying. He has fluctuations in form. He is South American, and he is just not as completely focused in his head as Max is or as Sebastian." So he's making the point that South American drivers, I guess, because of that, it should be mentioned that Sergio Perez is from Guadalajara, Mexico, which is not in South America, first and foremost.
Not even in Central America.
It's not even. We'll get that one out of the way. Is it not in Central? I actually don't know that. Is it not in Central America?
I think that's North America.
You're right. North America. You're right. Yeah. Of course it is. Canada. Yeah, yeah. Mexico. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. So not even. He did later on say, "I would like to apologize for my offensive remark. I want to make it absolutely clear that I do not believe that we can generalize about people from any country, any race, any ethnicity." Which is a fair point to make, because maybe Dr. Helmut Marko forgot about drivers such as Juan Manuel Fangio from Argentina, who seemed to do quite well, a young man called Ayrton Senna, who was from Brazil in South America, Nelson Piquet, another Brazilian, Carlos Reutemann, an Argentinian, Colombia had one, Pablo Montoya as well.
Just a big lack of focus.
Just a
really,
bunch of guys, a bunch of guys who just couldn't put it together. At the end of the day, it should be noted that South America has more Formula One world champions than ever. And I mean, that's not a country, but like the continent of South America has more Formula One champions than any country except for Great Britain. So, you know, I think they're doing all right. But also, it should be noted, Sergio Perez, not South American. So just a real top to bottom day to forget, interview to forget for Dr. Helmut Marko. Racist, geographically inaccurate, and historically inaccurate. Just that. 1, 2, 3. 3 strikes, you're out, Helmut. We'll see you next time at the plate. Try and do better.
Well, on that note, that's it for news. Now we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be back with the Singapore track walk. All right, Danny, hit us.
We're back. Singapore. Did you know they changed Singapore this year?
I didn't.
They did. They took out four corners.
Oh.
This is the biggest change since the drama of the Singapore sling being taken out back in... God, when was that? 2017 or something?
I don't know. Were we podcasting then?
I think we were. I think we've been doing this for like 9 years. I'm in America 10 years this November. And I think we started, you know, a year later or something.
Let's see if I can find out.
Singapore Sling was a particularly lumpy and ill-placed corner that sort of...
It was a chicane, was it?
It was the inside turn of a chicane. Mm. But it was a chicane. I mean, chicanes tend to be at the end of high speed areas, so you'd slow down for them, but it was a chicane that was tantalizingly, you know, not easy, but like there was a chance you could just drive straight through it. But if you hit this thing, you just got launched.
Yeah.
So they ended up sanding it down, basically. The Singapore
2013.
Thing. It was 2013.
It was reconfigured, okay. Yeah. So a year before Alt F1.
We started. Wow, that's wild. Yeah. Which was fairly new into the lifespan of Singapore. We've only had it since 2008. It's always been a night race, kind of came onto the scene. It was the first night race. It was one in a city. It's super unique. It's got a very like futuristic Wipeout vibe to it that even tracks since. I think the only one that might be similar is Vegas. We haven't seen Vegas yet, but we haven't had that type of, you know, even Jeddah is not in the city. Like Singapore is like, feels like the city is above us. The cars are driving over it. There's regular traffic, the skyscrapers. It just has a whole different vibe. It's 62 laps, so this has changed a little bit. It's 62 laps. It's 4.94 kilometers, which is just pretty much 3 miles on the button. The reason the drivers find it difficult here is that the track is a lot of it's all of it is on road. I think all of it. I think maybe there's two parts of it that are not on actual roads, but the rest of it is. But it's super hot and super humid here, and the drivers lose around 3 kilograms of weight during the race, which is 6.6 pounds. So where they've changed it is only the second half of Sector 3. So the right at the end of the race. There used to be, I've actually put the two images in our document here, Drew, if you want to scroll down a bit. Instead of 23 corners, now there's 19. So they've basically removed 4 corners that constitute almost like 4 right-hand turns. Like right, left, left, right. So a square.
Yeah, there was a bump. There was a bump in the road that basically made a trapezoid.
Exactly. It turned
not.
And now it's straight. Now it goes straight. Yeah. The part of the track that you may remember this. So this is after the bridge, and then you know there's that part where you go. Sorry, I should clarify that. You know there's a part where you go underneath the stands. It was like a little. It was like a bridge. You went the car went under.
Uh-huh.
There, that's been basically removed. Now you just drive behind it the whole time.
Okay.
So they've gotten rid of essentially kind like arguably 4 somewhat redundant corners. There used to be a little bit of action on turn 18, but not that much. So they've eased. I don't really understand why. I think one of the stands used to face there. What I'm guessing is happening now is that they're able to put a stand between what was 17 and 18 the entire way down there. So it might just be a case of this gives more places for spectators to sit. Hmm. I'm not quite sure. But it means...
Well, now it's also sharper. You know, you get... It's not a... From 14 to 16, it's relatively straight. And then you get to a sharp turn at 16. So it's potentially a passing zone.
That's
as
fair.
As opposed to these kind of like... There's like a little wiggle in the old stuff. And then like some not quite right angles that... You know, no one's going to pass you at, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, maybe more passing opportunity.
Perhaps you're right, yeah. There's no DRS zone there. They already have 3 here, so I guess they couldn't really add another one. Although that's straight. It's kind of a straight, right? It's got that little kink in turn 15 on it. That is actually longer than the one preceding it, the one between 13 and 14.
Yeah,
but
alas.
Yeah, but you're right. Like, maybe the DRS zone will be better if it was on this new part, because then, like you said, there'd be an overtaking opportunity. But
I mean, we might see some changes come practice, because they...
You're right, yeah.
They have been known
have
to
they
be
moved?
That.
Have they moved DRS zones? I know they've shortened them and they've gotten rid of them. Have they moved them as well?
I think
before?
So.
So yeah, we'll see.
That, like, on a weekend?
If they
that
put
I
one,
don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got to move the detection zone. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Anything
Singapore.
Could happen.
Anything could happen,
Max Verstappen
folks.
Could fly off of an asteroid and parachute out of his race car.
Anything can happen, and most likely it does. Is that what?
Yeah, that's anything can happen in Formula One, and it usually does.
And it usually does. A good old Murrayism there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, outside of the change, it's just a gnarly track. I love watching it. It's just mad. The whole thing just looks and feels super dirty and grimy and dusty, and the angles are great, and there seems to be parts where people throw the car up the inside. Like, it's not the easiest place to overtake. We've always had a lot of, I've said it before that, like, we've had a really good year as it pertains to race starts. This was a track that has had, this is a track where if somebody crashes up the inside, it's kind of like Spa. If somebody messes up the inside, you're in trouble. Like, it's going to take out a bunch of people. There's a huge runoff area outside turn one. And we've had that happen 3 times in my memory. We'll see. This is where Crashgate happened. It's where I remember Schumacher had a bunch of bad races here, spun out on turn 8. Memorable one. So we'll see. I don't know. I don't think it produces classics, but hopefully it should be an
high chance of
race.
Safety car.
High, very, very high chance of safety car here. Yeah. This is a real spend a couple of more laps in the tires just in case kind of race.
Right. Well, weather-wise, it looks to be a just balmy 86 degrees at 9 p.m. local time when the race starts.
Dear Lord.
71% humidity. Mm-hmm. That's 30 degrees Celsius for everyone out there in Celsius land. This is a qualifying day. It's only slightly cooler on race day. Precipitation, though, it's what everyone wants to know. Qualifying time, we're looking at 20%.
Really?
Chance of rain. Yep. And race time, 16% chance.
I feel like I can't.
And both of those have rain around midday. So we're probably going to see at least some wet tracks.
I'm trying to remember the last time Singapore in the wet is like, if you want to make the F1 video game look really good, do F1, do Singapore in the wet. But like, I'm trying to remember the last time we had a wet. It's not one.
A wet race start. Certainly. Remember when like Kimi Raikkonen came together with Sebastian Vettel and they both crashed into each other and then into Fernando Alonso.
Yeah.
At that race start.
Collected everyone.
Oh yeah.
God, that's a nightmare. It's a fun nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
As long as everyone drives away. But yeah, 20%. Don't count on it probably.
Yeah. Driver standings heading in to Singapore Grand Prix. Max Verstappen is on top with 364 points. That's math. Sergio Perez is in second with 219. Fernando Alonso in third with 170. And the last of the potential 2023 champions, Lewis Hamilton in fourth with 164 points. Carlos Sainz, mathematically impossible. Sorry, but you're in fifth place with 117 points. Just ahead of Charles Leclerc in sixth with 111. George Russell's in seventh with 109. Lando Norris in eighth with 79. Lance Stroll in ninth with 47. And Pierre Gasly in 10th with 37. Then we're tied between Esteban Ocon and Oscar Piastri with 36 points. Alex Albon has 21. Nico Hülkenberg has 9. Valtteri Bottas in 15th place with 6 points. And we've got Zhou Guanyu with 4, Yuki Tsunoda with 3, Kevin Magnussen with 2, and then a 4-way tie at 0 with Logan Sargeant, Liam Lawson, Nick DeVries, and Daniel Ricciardo, who is not coming back for Singapore. So expect to see some more Liam Lawson.
Yeah, rough job for him. Aaron Rodgers just having a real rough comeback.
Yeah. Constructor standings, Red Bull Racing is on top with 583 points. Mercedes, 273. Ferrari's in third with 228. Aston Martin's in fourth with 217. McLaren's in fifth with 115. Alpine's in sixth with 73. Williams in seventh with 21 points. Gene Haas and team, they're in eighth with 11. Alfa Romeo has 10. And Alfa Tauri has 3.
3.
Yes. If you would like to join the leaderboards yourself, you can join our fantasy league using the link in the show notes. And you can also send us an email, shiftf1podcast@gmail.com or f1.cool/emails. I'm going to kick off the email segment with this one from Lucas May.
Okay.
Who says, "Hey guys, hope you're all doing great. I just stumbled on a video from Dutch media outlet NOS, who were able to visit the F1 Media and Technology Center. Ooh. In Biggin Hill, England."
Oh, it's a biggin.
Oh, that hill's biggin. There's some interesting quotes and footage in there, so take a look at the video. There's a bit of Dutch, but it's mostly in English. Keep up the great show. Hope to meet you guys again sometime soon. And Rob, for the first time, I met you at the Dutch No Clip and Cloth Map meetups and bumped into Danny at E3 once. Wow, that is cool.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
Great to hear from you again, Lucas.
Yeah, we were doing Guerrilla Games. Why were you out there?
I out there?
You're just I think in the red light district. You're just smoking some weed and seeing some ladies.
It was ahead of another trip. I think it was the Balkans trip.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dutch people are rad.
It was fun. So I watched this video. It's only 5 minutes long. I wish it was longer because there is so many questions answered in here for me, and things that I didn't even know to think about, right? So they, for example, I'll link it in the show notes because everyone should watch it, but just for, you know, from a broadcast nerd perspective, Danny, I think you'd get a kick out of it too.
Oh my God, there's a lot of screens.
It's like Mission Control at you know, Houston for NASA, which they make reference to a few times. A few things that stood out to me. So this is where all of the video feeds come from the track. They are, you know, beamed to this one place in England through, you know, fiber optic undersea cables. They said they have three backups, you know, one main one and three backups of hard lines. And if those fail, they have a satellite backup.
Wow.
So it wouldn't necessarily get all the bells and whistles, but you would at least get some kind of transmission, which I would love to see what that would be like. But anyway, they all come into this building, and there is where they do things like the replays and the graphics and all of that kind of stuff. They have 12 replay editors. You know, when you're watching and you're like, wow, they got that replay really quickly, or at least this is what I'm thinking. Normal people will probably just like, you know, it's invisible to them. They just get the replay, right? Oh, that's, yeah, it's great. 12 different people are working on replays. You get to meet the dude who picks the radio messages that get broadcast. It's literally, they play a clip of what it sounds like when they're all going, and it's just, it's madness. It's like you've just turned on all the radios at the same time. and then there's two people that he works with who like do the trimming and the editing, and they are the ones that add the beeps for the swears.
Oh, cool. Wow, yeah, you have to do that live. That's crazy.
But I think the weirdest thing was that it's this control room that plays the champagne music on the podium.
Wait, so that's
it's
not there?
Broadcast, it is there, like through the speakers at the track and played over the broadcast
thing?
But they hit the button. I don't think so. I think it's a matter of they are listening to the commentary and they trigger when is right for the music to play. Again, there are so many details in here that like I want to know more about, so I wish this was like a 30-minute video instead of a 5-minute one, but like still it's pretty cool to see.
I'm fascinated just looking at it because it's like there's a guy working on a Premiere edit that definitely looks like an actual, I bet for the sake of the cameras, they might have also just opened the project, but it looks like it's the replay for the race that goes up on YouTube or something.
Oh yeah, it's probably the...
Yeah, there's too many layers for it to be something that was live. I wonder how they... Yeah, they also show that one of the cameras, it looks like the one from Zhou Guanyu's car. Is that what they're showing? The one that crashed at Silverstone and just how... You know, good quality, I guess it is. That's crazy.
Yeah, the guy claims that it wasn't the Halo that saved his life. It was this camera. Because it does have a big old skid on the top of it. Right. Like, it's the fluorescent yellow has been worn away.
Well, they're not wrong, because they ended up changing the regulation over that. Because the other, what's it called? The other thing broke.
The roll hoop.
The roll hoop broke. Or it wasn't, the specs were not, it was done within a different interpretation of the specs, basically.
Right.
That's why it didn't fail. That's why it failed.
Yeah, so it's 5 minutes. Lucas is right. There's only a little bit of Dutch in there, so it's mostly in English, and it's worth watching if you're a broadcast nerd like me.
Like us, yeah.
Danny, you want to take the second one?
Sure. This one comes in from Sean. Thank you very much for that. Spells out S-E-A-N as well. It's good stuff. Good stuff. I'll get down to it. I'm a pretty big fan of sailboat racing. Bear with me. I've mostly followed America's Cup in the past, but in recent years, a new format called Sail GP has emerged. It's a development spec series that is more reminiscent of IndyCar than F1, but it pits a fleet of boats from different nationalities against each other in a points match racing format with a final championship between the top three at the end. Who is bankrolling the German team, you might ask? None other than Captain Planet himself, Sebastian Vettel.
Yes.
After a recent race, he got certified to drive the boat. You drive boats? You drive boats? I guess you do. Yeah.
Sure.
The boats are specimens of modern engineering, literally flying around the water on hydrofoils. I think anyone with technical interest in F1 would be similarly enthusiastic about Sail GP. The broadcasts are also great visually, as the race is basically... all have aerial coverage with excellent graphics packages to be more watchable. Also free on YouTube, so very approachable from a cost of entry perspective. Viewers of F1 will also feel right at home because the sport is dominated by the well-heeled and the contestants are similarly petty about in-race penalties. Keep up the great work. Cheers. And that comes in from Sean. That sounds interesting. Sail GP. I'm going to check out their YouTube channel.
Nice. Yeah, I will link it in the show notes.
I wonder what the teams are on Sail GP. I wonder if they're... I think they're countries.
I think it's like Australia.
Oh, it is. Oh, that's cool. I'm into that. Is there an Irish team? There probably isn't. I don't know if we're good at that stuff. They had the America's Cup in the Bay the year I moved here. Yeah,
well, they also had Sail GP there, it seems.
Did they?
Yeah. Man, the grand final 2 months ago at in the Golden Gate Bridge is in the thumbnail. So
of course it is. Of course it is right also, there.
And they have a... it looks like they have a Drive to Survive analog. Sail GP colon Racing on the Edge, Season 4, Episode 2, colon Los Angeles.
Oh, I got to check it out. Do you want to know what the teams are? Australia, yes. Canada, yes. Emirates GBR, which is Emirates Great Britain. So that's confusing.
Okay. The Emirate of Britain.
The Emirates, the United Arab Kingdom. France, Germany, New Zealand, Rockwool Den, which I'm guessing is Denmark, it is.
Okay.
Sponsored by Rockwool. Spain, Switzerland, which is a landlocked nation in the mountains, I believe. But fair enough. Who am I to cast aspersions, being an island boy? And the United States, which is plenty of coastline. Yeah, that's funny. The only country here that's landlocked.
And wait a minute. I am watching something from the Switzerland GP team showing their simulator.
Oh my God.
I'm going to link this to you, Danny.
Surely there's a lake.
Somewhere. You've got to see this.
Where are you sending it?
I put Discord? It in Riverside chat.
All right, okay. When they're on a...
It's very...
That's a video? Show us this. Yeah. Thing. Simulator sessions. Oh my God, look at this. This looks... Oh my God.
I didn't know you could make a screen this big.
It's a big simulator because it's got a boat. Well, not a boat. It hasn't got the sail, but it's got everything else. Do you think they spritz them with water like Honey, I Shrunk the Audience?
It's in 4D.
They hire an intern to just, he's got a bucket of water he fills up every 5 minutes and throws it in their faces. That's mad. So, hey, look, man, if you're a rich, you know, landlocked country in the Alps and you don't have, you know, big ocean, then hey, why not, you know, spend your money, spend all that watch money, big simulator.
Yeah. There was one comment on this video. It says, okay, this I wasn't expecting.
There's one comment on this video?
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's got 2,500 views.
That is so cool to see hydrofoil sailing in full scale training simulator form. I agree. At DJFIL007.
If you go to the main page of SailGP on YouTube, there is a picture of what looks like the Rockwool Danish team, and they look like 14-year-old siblings. They look incredibly young.
And they look incredibly similar. Maybe they are.
Don't they?
Yeah.
Are these very young people? Is this like pro? It's like F1 where everyone's just like bred from a tiny age to... It's like, you hear those news stories about like 9-year-old circumnavigates the world. You're like, right. What the... What? Were your parents... It's Child Protective Services getting involved? Are we okay with this? I mean, sure. Like, you survived. Great. I guess you never hear about the ones that don't make it back, you know?
Yikes.
Yeah.
Anyway. Did you see they pulled over some guy for trying to go ahead and endurance this is gonna go. Record on a hamster wheel?
Excuse me? Water.
Yeah.
He tried to... Wait, they pulled him over on the water?
A waterborne hamster wheel. And he tried to... I don't know. He was crossing the English Channel or something. I can't remember what it was.
Oh, that's awesome. And why'd they stop him? Because it was too awesome?
I don't know. Yeah. Like
the continent... Because of Brexit, probably. It's probably had to fill in 15... documents of paperwork and submit it to the Chancellor of the Exchequer to do it.
Man trying to cross Atlantic. Oh my God, Jesus Christ. Atlantic.
Okay, now we're okay. It's a different ballpark now.
This is a headline. Man trying to cross Atlantic in giant hamster wheel charged over alleged knife threat.
What? Whoa.
U.S. Coast Guard says Reza Balucci stopped off South Carolina coast, threatened crew with knife and warning of bomb.
What? I've got a bomb in my hamster wheel. He just needed to.
Welcome to finding weird stuff on the internet with Drew and Danny.
Yeah, basically. Why was he going from South Carolina? I guess. Yeah, that's not the. It's not the most. He could have gone from. I don't know. Maybe he thought that the Coast Guard was kind of like not really watching in South Carolina. You know what I mean? Like Florida is like we were trying to stop drugs and stuff. And then north of that is like you're getting into D.C. and like terrorism and shit. And he's like, you know what? Nobody gives a shit. I'll just go from Myrtle Beach and no one will be watching. How far do you have to go from America to until you're in like pirate water and they can't pull you back in?
Pirate water, international waters.
International water. Where's Bermuda? Is that it?
Charging documents filed in federal court in Miami said the 44-year-old was, quote, conducting a manifestly unsafe voyage. Should we get back to Formula One, Danny? I've got a question here from Richard in Los Angeles who asks, hello, Shifties, what's the deal with the fancy leaf blowers that the pit engineers stick into the cars? They seem to be used a lot when the cars are brought into the garages or are sitting for an extended period of time. I realize I could probably just Google this, but why do my own research when I could write in an email? Mm. Thank you, Richard. Those cool the brakes.
Yeah.
I think they are basically leaf blowers, but they blow air. They're like they've got those special ducts that plug in to the brake ducts.
Like all a nice vacuum cleaner, just fits it real good.
Yeah, to keep the brakes cool.
Yeah, I was wondering, did they regulate those? Like, do they start a bit warmer and then cool? You know what I mean? Like, or do?
So my understanding of thermodynamics, Danny, which is slim, but
it's more than me.
I think the fact that the air is moving does much more than just letting them, than any temperature difference right. that they would be able to impart. Because the brakes, you know, they're like 1,000 degrees or something.
They're like glowing hot red.
Yeah.
So I get it. Yeah. So maybe if there's more air flowing over it, it's like taking heat from it or something right. like that. Okay.
Right.
Cool. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Because sometimes you'll see, you know, the brakes catch on fire or they'll smoke. So they want to cool them down when they come back in the car.
And those guys are like, they're like a dog with a bone. Remember the fella at NASCAR who was just like blowing leaves out of the way all the time because he just had it in his hands. He was like, what am I supposed to do? I'll just blow leaves around.
You know what I mean? That's right. We got to keep the pit box clean too.
Keep it clean. And they sprayed that stuff on the ground too, didn't they?
The sticky
stuff.
Adhesive. Yeah.
Help them pit. Pretty cool.
So Danny, I was thinking if we needed something to watch for Patreon bonus, we would either do Sail GP
or this email next from Patrick email. Lucas Austin. PLA, let's go. Hey, Shift F1 team. By the way, I like how Richard called us Shifties. It's kind of like my wife's a big Taylor Swift fan. Although not as big a Taylor Swift fan as us, because we've both seen her live at the Formula One in Austin.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
So I like the idea that we're, Shifties. Everyone here is a Shifties. Shifty. You know, how many costume changes are we going to have during this podcast? Check our YouTube videos to find out. Hey, Shift F1 team. My name's Patrick Austin. I'm a longtime listener and recent supporter. I'm glad you're all spending time diving into racing anime, listening to some of your initial D episode right now. And I'd like to recommend one you might enjoy. IGPX, the Immortal Grand Prix. Have you read this, Drew?
I have read it. And I think we may have brought this up as like, as a potential here, but I didn't know what it was about. So
I don't think I've ever heard of this. Okay.
Okay.
No, it's not about undead drivers. God, I'm already disappointed. That would have been so good. But pilots of ass-kicking racing mechs that duke it out on a racetrack filled with obstacles, tight turns, and yes, a very cool straight. It all takes place in a futuristic desert city built to maintain the industry. That sounds a little bit like what was the other one we did? Redline, yeah. The show follows the America-based team Satomi as it moves up from the second-tier IG2 league to the titular IGPX. Along for the ride are the team's trio of pilots, their distinguished coach, and an obnoxious disgruntled coach. The opposite of distinguished. And an anxious team owner desperate to change the trajectory of the company she inherited from her grandfather. Basically, think Claire Williams. And if that hasn't sold you on it, there's even a tie-in PS2 game to go along with it. Love the show. Keep it up. That's from Patrick. Lucas Austin, thank you so much, Patrick. Yeah, I'm going to check that out. That sounds pretty good. The Immortal Grand Prix. There was a set of Japanese racing games that had a very... Was it Heavenly Grand Prix? Is that what... There was had a very strange... I'm going to have to look this up again. It was something like that. They have... I just love the naming conventions. There is also a video game called Satoru Nakajima F1 Hero 2, which sounds like a great video game.
GameSpot apparently reviewed IGPX Immortal Grand Prix in 2006. 5.9.
Human Grand Prix is what I'm thinking of.
Okay.
There is a series of Japanese video games called Human Grand Prix. It's four of them. Human Grand Prix, as opposed to God knows what else.
It only says GameSpot staff here, but I like this last paragraph here. You won't have any fun with IGPX Immortal Grand Prix until you master its mostly opaque control interface. And even then, what you'll experience is probably the lowest common denominator of fun.
Oh my God. Nobody put their name on it.
This only makes me want to play it more.
Yeah, kind of. That sounds rad. IGPX, the Immortal Grand Prix on PS2. Is that what you said?
Yep.
I'm going to watch this video of it for 2 seconds to see if I can get a sense of how mech and how F. It's very mech. It's very mech. Imagine mechs with wheels. Like they're standing up and they're driving.
Okay.
That's the look you're going for. So it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of like rollerblading robots.
Okay. You're really selling me on it, Danny.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
We'll propose it to Rob and give him the two options and see what, see what our troika can come up
with. See what he thinks. There you go. IGPX was created by the same studio that created Ghost in the Shell, according to YouTube commenter Nvidia Envy. So who knows? Either that or IGP. Both equally ridiculous. We can agree.
Yep. Yeah.
Completely. Yeah.
ShiftF1Podcast @gmail.com or f1.cool/emails. You can also hit us up on the socials, which are in the show notes. That's us around the internet. Should we take it around the world of racing?
Day? Let's race around the world.
NASCAR. Let's talk about it.
I've heard of it.
They've got three different series. One of them is the Craftsman Trucks, who are at the Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend in Bristol, Tennessee, for the Uno 200 presented by Ohio Logistics.
Like the card game?
All caps, UNOH.
Oh, almost.
Not
almost.
Uno, but Uno.
You know.
That's what
you
I'm
don't
going
know,
with. Anyway.
Now you know.
If you don't know that Ohio isn't in Tennessee, this is going to be confusing.
That is confusing.
The NASCAR Xfinity Series, also at Bristol Motor Speedway in Bristol, Tennessee, for the Food City.
Oh, Food City. Thank God.
300.
Thank God. Food City.
Bristol, Tennessee is turning into Food City for the weekend.
You know.
Motocross Grand Prix is in Than Hoi in Vietnam.
Sounded like a motocross place.
Motocross Grand Prix of Vietnam. The IMSA weather, at least they could get a race going there, unlike Formula One.
Oh, yeah, good point.
The IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship is at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the IMSA Battle on the Bricks.
Battle on the Bricks. Is it bricks? Like yellow brick road? That might be the worst, like, surface for racing. Can you imagine? Like, every single foot is like a Baku manhole cover waiting to be spun up by, like, by the end of the race, it's just like fucking loose bricks everywhere.
Gotta get
that'd
the,
be amazing.
The bricklayers out there.
Yeah, get them out there.
Super GT is at Sportsland Sugo. Man, the best circuit names are in Japan.
Food City, Sportsland. We're just loving, like, it's like today the writer's strike is on and the executives are naming everything in our world.
Sportsland Sugo is a motorsports facility in the town of Murata, Shibata District, ooh, Miyagi Prefecture.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
The Repco Supercars are at the Sandown International Motor Speedway in Springvale, Victoria, Australia, for the Penrite Oil Sandown 500.
Sandown.
I think I drifted into John F. Kennedy there for a second.
Yeah.
Australian's very difficult for me.
Can't wait for the race in Sandown.
It's pretty good.
Mayor Quimby.
We got NASCAR.
Oh my.
Also at Bristol for the Bass Pro Shops night race.
What a trifecta. We got Food City. We got Xfinity, America's favorite internet. We got Uno. One of those is not happening. I forget which one. And we got whatever you just said.
The nights when the bass come out. So.
The bass. Yeah. Bass Pro Shops.
Yeah.
Buy your bass.
And Formula One, maybe you've heard of it. Friday, September 15th, things kick off. Free practice one, 5:30 a.m. Eastern time on ESPN2, followed by free practice two at 9 a.m. on ESPN2. Saturday, September 16th, free practice three at 5:30 a.m. Eastern time on ESPN2. Mm. Qualifying, 9 a.m. on ESPN2. But the race, everyone, Sunday, September 17th, 8 a.m. Eastern on ESPN.
Great. Singapore. I've heard it's one of Helen Marco's favorite cities in South America.
Well, that's what's going on this weekend, Danny. What's happening today in the past?
What's happening today in the past? September 13th. While I look at this beautiful picture of Mika Häkkinen on the other side of the page.
He looks really happy.
He does. He looks terrifically happy. What year was this? It was September 2001. Oh, it was when he announced his sabbatical. No wonder he's so happy. September 13th, the 2007 F1 season was blighted by the so-called Stepney Gate. We're talking about Crash Gate, and now we're talking about the gate that was before that. There was, yeah, Stepney Gate. Scandal, which when disaffected Ferrari engineer Nigel Stepney was alleged to have passed information about the cars onto McLaren designer Mike Coughlan. On this day, the World Motorsport Council announced McLaren were fined $100 million and excluded them from the Constructions Championship. McLaren drivers Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso were not penalized. Lewis Hamilton would go on to just barely lose the championship that year. But today, in 2008, the year he did win the championship, although Felipe Massa might have something to say about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. The drivers were hit by heavy rain in qualifying for the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, and some coped better than others. The big surprise was Sebastian Vettel, the 21-year-old rookie in the Toro Rosso, who took pole position to become the youngest ever pole sitter in F1. He said, "Unbelievable, incredible. I never dreamt of being on pole." I'm guessing they didn't finish that story because the next day they did. But yes, that makes sense. So he did end up going on to win that race from pole and became the youngest F1 driver right up until Max won in 2017. Where did he win?
Was it Sochi or was it Spain?
I can't remember. But it was 2017. And he got it. But great drive from Sebastian Vettel. And then managed to do it. And pole at Monza, I feel, is not necessarily, it's not Monaco. It's not, he was at Toro Rosso. So he did really well. I forget if it was raining that day as well. But yeah, obviously a young prodigy coming into the sport. We haven't had one of those in a little while.
Yeah. Well, they disallowed, I think, people younger than 18 after Verstappen, right?
Is that true?
I think so.
Oh.
Well, all right. We got through that one unscathed. Thank you, Danny.
We did. Thank you. Phew. Can never tell.
If you would like to, I'm sorry. Final thoughts, Danny, ahead of Singapore Grand Prix.
I go into this one just kind of enjoy the spectacle of it. I'm interested to see if that little change at the end of Sector 3 is going to mix it up a bit. And it's, we're here to entertain. We're here to you know, try and create a narrative for people and keep everyone, not keep people interested, but like there's a certain element of like, you know, I think we're both positive people generally. There's no getting around the fact that like the championship is basically over. Lots of the other points paying positions are over. I think my head right now is transitioning to the constructors battle and kind of who'll end up there. And maybe there's the battle for second, who knows? Perez starts to choke a bit, although he seems like he's coming out of that a little bit. And I feel like some of these circuits are going to suit him a bit better as well. Like a lot of these are circuits he's very, very, very familiar with. So, I don't feel like he's going to struggle as much. But yeah, I think at this end of the season, if you start to like wander off a little bit, I was talking to somebody earlier today actually about just how good IndyCar was this year and like how, you know, in a way I've enjoyed Formula One, you know, maybe a little bit less because Indy was so entertaining. Even the individual races were, although we've had some good ones, mostly because of rain this year. But that's kind of usually at this stage. If the championship isn't like going whole hog, if there's not like a good fight there, I sort of make up something to think about or to enjoy. Yeah. And to me, that's probably what I'm going to do at Singapore.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of why I like doing this podcast, because I'm up to date on all the battles, all of the. You know, the inter-sport drama that make it more than just about the who's at the front. But and yeah, I agree with you. It does take a little more effort to, you know, to be excited about that stuff. But you know, like we said, Singapore always, not always, but it's always an unknown. I would say it doesn't always deliver something crazy, but it is always. Anything could happen.
Yeah, there's been some boring ones. There's been some good ones. There's been some great ones. There's been some middling ones. It's a real, like, you'll see what you get. But I always enjoy the look of it, if nothing else. And the other thing we have to look forward to between now and the end of the season is a whole new Grand Prix. Like, Vegas is going to be an interesting thing. Kind of just hope, my one thing I hope now is that Ricardo's back for Vegas, because he was the one who was all about Vegas. He suggested Vegas before Vegas was even on the cards. He's a big Vegas fan. I think it'll be a bummer for him to come back and then not get to race in that one. So I think, fingers crossed he's back for that.
Well, if you would like to support the show and get access to all of our bonus episodes, the ad-free version of the podcast, and the official Shift F1 Discord, you can do so over at patreon.com/ShiftF1. Have a good race weekend, everyone. We will see you all next week.